Parshas Devarim. We're just now a couple of days away from Tisha B'Av, and unsurprisingly, we find in the Parsha, in Parshas Devarim, there are indeed connections between Parshas Devarim and Tisha B'Av. In Perek Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Zayin, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu, is recalling the Aveira of Chet HaMeraglim, and he goes through the entire narrative detail by detail, and then he says that as a result of having spoken against Eretz Yisrael, it was decreed upon you that you cannot enter Eretz Yisrael. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says the following: Gam bi hisanach Hashem biglalchem leimor. And so too with me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu got angry with me biglalchem, because of you. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Gam ato, you too, lo yisovo yisham, shall not enter Eretz Yisrael. And this is a pasuk that is very troubling in the eyes of all the Mefarshim, the Ramban, and others discuss this at one moment. Klal Yisrael were not allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael, that's true, as a direct result of the Chet HaMeraglim. But Moshe Rabbeinu, surely the reason why he couldn't enter Eretz Yisrael was nothing to do with the Meraglim. He couldn't enter Eretz Yisrael because of a total different episode, the Chet of the main Meriva. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu mean when he said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu got angry with me and Biglalchem, because of you, I cannot enter Eretz Yisrael? What does that mean, because of you, I cannot enter Eretz Yisrael? This is a question, as we mentioned, that is discussed in many of the Mefarshim. But let's turn our attention to the Mahalach of the Ohr HaChaim. The Ohr HaChaim HaKadosh says as follows. By way of introduction, let's remind ourselves of what I think is a famous Medrash. And it's similar to Gemara in Kiddushin as well, but it's essentially a Medrash in Eicha Rabbah. The Medrash in Eicha Rabbah quotes the Pasuk, Mizmor La'osof. When you see the word Mizmor, a song, you would assume that we're talking about a joyous event. And yet the Pasuk continues and it says, Boyu Goyim B'Nachal Osecho. Goyim came and they invaded and they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Question being, if the subject matter of this parak in Tehillim is the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, well, why would it begin with the words Mizmor La'asof? Great joy? That's not a joy. As the Medrash says, surely it should have said Bechi La'asof, a cry or a kina La'asof. But why would you begin this parak of Tehillim with the words Mizmor La'asof? So the Medrash says the following mashal. The Medrash talks about the king who built a beis chuppah lebnoi. He builds a magnificent chuppah for his son and gets it ready in the most beautiful adorned fashion until he sees that his son goes off the derech, as it were. So the king approaches the chuppah that he himself has built over a course of a long time. He smashes it to smithereens, rips it up into pieces, and all of a sudden the king starts singing. They say to the king, what's going on? The chuppah of your son has just been ruined and you're sitting here singing? So he says, yes, I'm singing at least at the fact that I vented my anger, as it were, against the chuppah and not against my son. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is the Mizmor, as it were. But rather than HaKadosh Baruch Hu ruining and destroying Klal Yisrael, instead HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash in its place. In other words, it sounds like from the Medrash there was almost a choice. It was either Klal Yisrael or the Beis HaMikdash, but one of them had to go. So there's a Mizmor, we rejoice, as it were, over the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash rather than destroying and annihilating Klal Yisrael. So Erechaim HaKadosh says the following. This is based on the Gemara and Gemara in Sefer. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have entered Eretz Yisrael and would have built the Beis HaMikdash, then the Beis HaMikdash could never, ever, ever have been destroyed. What Moshe Rabbeinu builds cannot be destroyed. If that's the case, then what would have happened? When eventually Klal Yisrael would have sinned, and the choice would have been on the table again, should we annihilate Klal Yisrael or ruin the Beis HaMikdash? But the second option would no longer have been available. Ruin the Beis HaMikdash, it cannot be destroyed. That which is built by Moshe Rabbeinu cannot be destroyed. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu would, as it were, would have had no choice but to annihilate Klal Yisrael. When was it predestined, as it were, that Klal Yisrael would indeed sin? And there was going to be a Tisha B'Av, it was the night of the Meraglim. When they came back and they cried, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu said, you cry tonight, you'll cry forever on this night. In other words, there's going to be a Churban. At that moment, it was decided, or it was known, that there's going to be a Churban. And now the question is, so which Churban is it going to be? Is it going to be the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Churban of Klal Yisrael? Says Moshe Rabbeinu, that's why I wasn't allowed into Eretz Yisrael. Biglal Chem, as a result of the Chet HaMeraglim. Because had there not been a Chet HaMeraglim, then there wouldn't necessarily have ever been a Churban. So I could have entered Eretz Yisrael and built the Beis HaMikdash, and it would have remained standing forever. Once there was a Chet HaMeraglim, and there was therefore going to be the resultant Churban, as a result of that Biglal Chem, because of you, I couldn't enter Eretz Yisrael. I wasn't allowed to enter and build the Beis HaMikdash, such that eventually the Churban had to come about, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to destroy the Beis HaMikdash rather than destroying Klal Yisrael. That's how the Yerachayim learns Pshat in this pasuk. Yerachayim himself, a couple of psukim, a couple of prokim later, when in Perek Gimel, in the beginning of Parshas Vayetzchanan, where it says, Moshe Rabbeinu asked, Ebro no ve'ere es ha'aretz. Let me just cross over and just have a look at Eretz Yisrael. And the Yerachayim once again points out, this is what Moshe Rabbeinu was stressing. I would like to cross over and just have a look. Don't worry, I'm not planning on building the Beis HaMikdash there. Had I gone into Eretz Yisrael and built the Beis HaMikdash, that could never have happened. Because that would necessarily have meant that there would be eventually a Churban of Klal Yisrael. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, I'm just going to have a look at Eretz Yisrael. We say every day in Davening, in the Bracha of Yerushalayim Ircha, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should be Boina a Binyan Oilon. Yerushalayim Ircha Berachem Im Tosho V'Sishkem V'Secho Kasher Dibarto V'Nei Oiso B'Korav Yomeinu Binyan Oilon. It should be an eternal Binyan. And the truth is, the Medrash says quite clearly in a couple of places that until this point, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Beis HaMikdash was built by human hands, by Shlomo HaMelech, etc. Aval Ato, in the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ani Boina Oisa, I will build it, Ve'eini Machriv Olam, and it will never be destroyed. Medrash in Parshas Noach, a Medrash in Parshas in the Tehillim. If Moshe Rabbeinu builds the Beis HaMikdash, it cannot be destroyed. Kol Shekein and Kol V'Chaimer, that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu builds the Beis HaMikdash, obviously it cannot be destroyed. And so that's what we're saying in Davening. When we ask for Yerushalayim Ircha, we say, Uvnei Oiso, you shall build it. Because if you build it, then we can be rest assured that it will indeed be a Binyan Olam. It will remain forever and will never ever be destroyed. As we mentioned, we are less than 48 hours away from Tisha B'Av. And it's a time, therefore, to turn our attention, if we haven't already, to the upcoming Yom, the upcoming Moed of Tisha B'Av. The story is told of two children, two cheder yingelach, two boys sitting on the same bench, in the same class, in a cheder in Poland, living a very tranquil and peaceful childhood. Until 1939 came along and the war broke out. Both of them survived the Holocaust and they both moved over to America. And one of the two friends set up a bais, Ne'eman b'Yisrael, set up a family, a wife and children of Shomrei Torah or Mitzvah. And yet the second one, he left the fold. He left authentic Yiddishkeit. And he said that he just saw too much in the Holocaust and he lost his emunah. He lost his faith. And when he met up with his friends at some further point, he said, "How did you stay religious? After all that we saw," he said, "I lost my faith in the Holocaust." And the second one said, "I consolidated and I strengthened my faith in the Holocaust." He said, when we learned in Cheder, the two of us, we learned the Psukim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that if Klal Yisrael will sin, if Klal Yisrael will commit Averas, they will be punished severely. And I must be honest, I thought to myself, no, it can never happen. And then I saw with my own eyes how it did happen. So I consolidated my faith. Right there, in the concentration camp, that's where I was in Chazik, in the emunah that I have in the Rabbeinu Shalila. In other words, on occasion, it is during a sorrow, even a very severe sorrow, that a person can be in a chazik, not despite, but very much as a result of the sorrow he sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know that on Tisha B'Av we don't say Tachanun. This Shabbos Mincha, we will not say Tzidkoscha, just like on a Yom Tov, on Erev Yom Tov. And Chazal tell us because Tisha B'Av is indeed called a Moyed. The Pasuk in Eicha says, Kora Olai Moyed. This is a Moyed. Which seems very difficult to understand, because we associate Moyed with Moyadim, the Simcha, Sukkot, Pesach, Shavuot. The very Pasuk that writes Korah Olai Moyed continues and it says Lishboir Bachurai, to kill out, to wipe out hundreds and thousands of people who are killed during the Zman of the Churban. So what type of Moyed is this? What is it that we're celebrating on this Moyed? And it is well known, I heard this in the name of the Tel Zerov and others as well, what is translation of the word Moyed? When we talk about in the Mishkan, the Oyel Moyed, the Moyed is a meeting place. It's true. On Yom Tov you meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu through joy, so it's Moyadim B'Simcha. But you can also meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu through sadness and difficulty, and then it's Moyadim B'Sorah. But it's nonetheless a Moyed all the same. It's a meeting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We see things that are so fantastic, so extraordinary, that you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Torah. So we think to ourselves, on this Moed, on this upcoming Moed of Tisha B'Av, as we think to ourselves and the surrounding Torahs that we're all aware of within our own Dalad Amos and outside of our Dalad Amos, we're surrounded by Tzoras, Rachmana Litzlan, which as we know are the direct result of Churban Beis Hamikdash. And we think to ourselves, when the Beis Hamikdash was around, they were able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly. There were 10 nisim daily in the Beis Hamikdash. It was clearly evident. You saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu every single day. There were Koyanim being oved in the Beis Hamikdash, and there were Leviim singing. Klal Yisrael was there. Just a mere trip to Yerushalayim was a whole chizuk in Emunah, as the Torah describes, and we don't have any of that. And all of that was taken away as a result of our Averus. So we're here almost 2,000 years later thinking to ourselves, the perennial question, so what do we do? And in fact, how can we be expected to do anything? Because there were Doiros previous, Gedolei Yisrael, who are, as it were, unable to bring about the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. So how are we expected to bring about the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash? What is the Avodah? What is the Avodah Hayoim on this Moed of Tisha B'Av? So I heard one very beautiful moshel, a very poignant moshel, which illustrates and demonstrates for us what exactly is required of us. The moshel of the king and his family who are living in the palace, and they're living a royal life. His children, his sons, his daughters certainly don't go to a regular public school. They're home trained and schooled by special tutors. Their food is not just shipped in and brought from the local makolet, but they have an expert chef who's there in-house, the palace, cooking them special royal food. And in fact, every aspect of their life is of course unique in fitting with their royal existence. And the children are constantly taught the message that you're a prince and you're a princess, and that's why we live differently. So we don't just go to regular schools and regular stores and regular clothes. In fact, there's nothing regular about us at all. One of the sons of the king feels, despite his royal lifestyle, he feels very restricted. And he hears and he sees that there's a whole huge, big, wide world out there. And one night he leaves the palace in the dark, and he makes his way into the town, and he hears noise, laughing, merriment, and he finds himself in the Beis Yayin, in the pub. Everyone's having a good laugh and a good joke, and everyone seems to be having a wonderful time. So he says, let me try some of it. And he gets involved, and he ends up shikah until he eventually totters back to the palace. So his father says to him, how can you do such a thing? You're a prince. And this keeps on happening. He leaves the palace and he finds himself mixed up with the wrong type of people, in the wrong circles, in the wrong places. Until at one point, the father calls him in and says, listen, the way you're behaving is no longer appropriate for the palace. You have to leave the palace. Your place is no longer here. Your place is outside. And the son thinks to himself, oh, how lucky I am. It's exactly what I wanted. And he leaves the palace. He leaves the palace. And he gets mixed up with a circle of lowlifes, bandits, people who live in the street, roam the street. And he joins their merry band. Comes to the first night, and they take him with their group into the forest, and he says to them, well, where are we sleeping? And he says, they say to him, we're sleeping right here in the forest. And he says, I can't sleep here in the forest, I'm a prince. I'm a Ben Melech. I'm used to sleeping in a four-poster bed, upholstery and pillows and cushions, here in the floor, in the wild. They said, listen, as long as you're with us, this is where you're sleeping. He wakes up in the morning, he says, well, what's for breakfast? He says, here, a bit of black stale bread. He says, black stale bread? I'm a Ben Melech. I'm a prince. I'm used to better than this. And they say to him, as long as you're with us, this is what you eat. And it comes to lunchtime, and he says to them, well, what's for lunch? He says, there isn't any, so we're going to go into one of the farms and steal some birds and maybe have a barbecued lunch. And he says, what? Steal birds that don't belong to me? I'm a Ben Melech. I'm a prince. I don't behave like this. Until he finds himself saying time and time and time again the very message that his father was trying to impart to him whilst he was in the palace. But unbeknown to him, the king had sent a couple of his close aides to follow and to have a look and see how the prince is doing. And they report back to the Melech, this is what's happening to your son. And he summons his son and he says to his son, it seems to be that you finally realized what you could never learn whilst you were in the palace. Apparently you seem to have learned now that you've left the palace. And the very fact that you feel that you're a Ben Melech and you don't belong to sleep in the forest and to eat black bread and to steal your lunch, if you now feel that and you yearn for the palace and you realize that outside of the palace is not your place, now is finally the time you can indeed take your place back in your rightful place in the palace. When the Beis HaMikdash was Kayim and the Nevi'im were telling Klal Yisrael, this is not a way to behave. Why are you trying to emulate and gravitate towards the Goyim? You're the B'nai Melachim. And they didn't understand, or they chose not to understand. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu ruins the palace and drives them out until such point where they themselves feel that I don't belong here. And this is all so wrong. Because it's only when we have that feeling that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you seem finally to have learned outside of Yerushalayim, but I only wish you would have understood whilst you were in Yerushalayim in the first place. The danger, of course, in the Moshul is that the story wouldn't have ended that way. The danger is that the Moshul would have ended differently, with the prince feeling very, very comfortable in the forest. This is just fine. I'm not missing anything. I'm more than happy to sleep on the floor and eat back bread and steal my lunch. And that's why we too live in that danger of feeling all too comfortable in God. And that's why we sometimes have a moyed through sorrows. Because sometimes it's these sorrows that wake us up and all of a sudden we realize this is all wrong. We're not at home at all. And how many times has history taught us that when Klal Yisrael were too comfortable in the Golus and they didn't miss home, they didn't miss Yerushalayim, everything was just fine and wonderful, that precipitated some of the worst sorrows that ever befell Klal Yisrael. We all know that the Spanish expulsion in 1492 followed directly the period that is commonly known as the golden age of Spanish Jewry. The golden age, everything was just fine and wonderful. And who would have thought in the early 20th century, when Jews were living it up in Germany, the cutting edge of culture and fashion, Bonnie Germany, as the Oyer Sameach, the Meshech Chochma, wrote in Parshas B'Chukotai, woe to those, he wrote in the 1920s, prophetically, woe to those who think that Berlin is Yerushalayim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, within a couple of decades, turned the lights out in Europe and showed them that Berlin is absolutely not Yerushalayim. And indeed, when these sorrows befall us, it is then, and sometimes only then, that we realize, one second, I'm a Ben Melech, I'm a prince. This is not the way I should be treated. This is not the way I should be living my life. And it is precisely through these sorrows that we want to reconnect and we realize that we need to come home. The story is told of a Jew in Poland who married out and abandoned all semblance of Yiddishkeit whatsoever. Unrecognizable as a Jew. In fact, nobody knew he was even a Jew. At least almost nobody knew that he was a Jew. He became the mayor of the city. And unbeknownst to most, he was actually a Jewish boy. When the war broke out, the Holocaust, the Nazis came to town and they were determined to wipe out all of the Jews. All of the Jews. And somebody reported to the Nazi guards, you know this mayor, we have inside information, he happens to be a Jew. They try to investigate, they try to inquire, to no avail. They eventually tracked him down and arrested him, and they said, "Are you a Jew?" And he wouldn't admit it. He wouldn't admit it. After all, he'd never been living a Jewish lifestyle all his life. So they dragged him to the shul. They took out his Sefer Torah for Aron HaKodesh, and they gave it to him, and they told him, "Here, take this Sefer Torah and throw it on the floor." At that moment, he held on to the Sefer Torah tight, and he burst out crying. And through his tears, he said to them, "How can I ever thank you? You have just returned to me my Yiddishkeit. You have just returned my Yiddishkeit to me. I left Judaism, I left Torah and mitzvahs many, many years ago. I will never, ever throw a Sefer Torah onto the floor." And he kissed the Sefer Torah and returned it to the Aron HaKodesh ad sheyotza nishmasei be'echad. And that has really been the story of our Golus. That when things were more than comfortable, when we thought that Berlin was Yerushalayim, and we didn't miss Yerushalayim, and we didn't miss the Beis HaMikdash, and we were all too comfortable in Golus, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to send us Tzoris and Nisyonim. And sometimes it was during those Tzoris, like this mayor says, "Oh, you've just returned my Yiddishkeit to me. I realize that this is wrong, and I'm longing for home, and this is wrong, and I don't belong here." We read in the Kinnot, the Mesiras Nefesh of so many Kehilot HaKodesh and Gedolei Yisrael who are determined to lead their lives as B'nai Melochim, as princes. And therefore, that's really our Avodah on Tisha B'Av. To think about how we can lead our lives more and more as B'nai Melochim. How many times do we ask questions, is this Mutter, is this Asa? When really the question we should be asking is this appropriate or inappropriate? Because the answer might well be that la halacha is mutter, but you're a ben melech, and a ben melech doesn't behave this way. How many shailas have I heard over the last few days? All types of interesting and fancy shailas of heterim you wouldn't believe that people have managed to conjure up during the 9 days. You know what? It's mutter. Is this appropriate? Is this the type of Yiddishkeit that you want to lead? Is this the type of bias that you want to set up? Are you looking for heterim and this is mutter and that's mutter, so leave me alone? Or would you rather step up, not step down? You'd rather upgrade and not downgrade your Yiddishkeit. You'd rather feel that I'm Ben Melech and I want to lead my life that way. And if we try and be mechazik in those areas, in the areas of our Yiddishkeit where we can be mechazik ourselves, not always to think what's necessarily mutter or asur, but what is an appropriate way to behave, we are the representatives of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Torah. Not to feel that life is just perfect, swimming, sailing along, everything is just comfortable, that Berlin is Yerushalayim. Rather, things are not comfortable. Things are not comfortable over here. This is not the life that a prince should be leading. The life that a prince, that a ben melech should be leading, is the life together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Yerushalayim, together in the Beis HaMikdash, and Mitzvah Hashem should be built from here of Yomeinu Amen.